Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to Horse Hour. I'm Amy Frost and my guest today is Jenny Gilbert. Jenny's an endurance rider who was the first rider to win a national novice championship with a perfect score. That was on her horse Flurry. They've also won the overall supreme championship twice. Jenny's a former director of Endurance Great Britain and she was the chair of the Ride and Rules Committee. Plus, for 30 years, she's been the County Access Officer for West Yorkshire. Jenny's going to explain all about endurance and how you can get involved with saving our bridleway access routes. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. Today we're talking about endurance because it's a subject that we don't talk about enough, I don't think. So I'd like to welcome Jenny Gilbert. She has been a director for Endurance Great Britain. She was on the board and she, as a secretary, runs quite a few of endurance events around the UK. On top of that, she's a rider herself and she's a volunteer and works on the access team for the British Horse Society. Jenny, how are you?
Fine, thank you very much. It's been a hectic week as usual.
It's always busy in the world of horses.
Oh, yes.
How are you coping with the dark nights coming in earlier?
Well, I'm very lucky because I don't work anymore. I'm able to choose my time for riding.
Oh, how lovely.
But this time of year is the quiet time. We normally start in January bringing them up and training properly for the new season. So this is the calm before the storm.
When many people say this is the storm because it's nightmare, it's cold, it's wet, it's miserable. This is the worst of the year, really, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
So for endurance then, when do you start training for the next season?
Traditionally, we start straight after Christmas. But because you are always building on the previous year's fitness, you're not starting from the beginning again. So you're building on a layer upon layer. As the horse gets older, it gets fitter more easily.
Building up the muscles, I guess, and the stamina.
Yes.
Don't they lose that throughout the winter, though, if you don't train?
No.
Oh, really?
No. The underlying fitness stays. You have to get the legs, the ligaments and tendons, hardened up a little bit, and you start with walking and so on, but you're actually starting at a higher level than the previous year, and so you don't have to start at the very short distances if you don't want to.
So what got you into endurance in the beginning?
I had a pony that liked to go quite fast and used to love exploring. She wasn't suitable for, jumping or dressage or anything like that, but we loved exploring, so that's how I got into it. I read Anne Hyland's book on 100-mile ride, and it just inspired me to find out about it and take the plunge.
Oh, I think it's lovely. I think quite often when I hear of riders in other bigger countries like Australia and America, and they go on trail rides for days. And I imagine, I don't know, I've never done endurance, but I imagine that's a bit what it's like. It can be like that.
Yes, it is. You're going to new areas and exploring, and the horses love going to different places. It's, they pick up their ears and they're off and away.
So you must have such a good bond and such good trust between each other, between the horse and the rider.
Yes, you've got to enjoy spending hours with your horse. If you don't, it won't work. You've got to have come to an agreement about, how the horse behaves on these occasions and, really enjoy your enjoy your horse's company.
Yeah, a lot of us love our horse's company, but we're not brave enough to go out for hours and hours and hours. I have this fear, if I go too far, then I panic, because I think, oh gosh, it's going to take me in 2 hours to get home, and that freaks me out enough. So I have this 2 hour window.
Well, that's why the, you know, the pleasure rides and fun rides are useful, because it gets you started and gives you more confidence in what you're doing and helps your map reading. So then you can, when you're feeling a little bit braver, you can tackle a little bit longer distance and so on and progress as you want. Because as a sport, it requires quite a large time commitment. So you usually find that the distance or the classes that you can enter is determined by the amount of time you have available.
Well, the time that you have available to ride? Or
Yes.
I see. Mm-hmm. So what are the different distances?
Well, the shortest rides are, you know, they can go from like 10K right up to 160K.
Wow. How long does that take?
The 160 takes a full day.
Goodness.
Sort of 10, 11 hours, that sort of thing.
Gosh, your bottom must be so strong.
No, it's not. That's something always people always say, but you're not just sitting in the saddle, you know, you're joining in.
Oh, I guess, yes, because you've got to walk and do you do some running alongside it? So do you have to really work on your long distance running too?
No, I don't run, because I find my horse can go faster than I can. So you have to really concentrate on you being as fit as your horse so that you can ride in balance. Because the last thing your horse needs is for you to be bobbling around on the back, you know. You've got to keep your concentration, and your horse has to keep its concentration as well. Otherwise, it just won't work.
Yeah, I can imagine. Jenny, you've been doing this a long time. You're working for the volunteering for the BHS for over 30 years. So how has the sport changed since when you began?
There's so many more roads. I mean, most riding areas are under threat by either new roads, new railway lines, new housing estates. It's very difficult now to find enjoyable riding routes, and it's, you know, it's not going to get any easier. I don't know how it's going to work in the future, because people just won't have access to the countryside the same way as we have.
I mean, I feel I'm very lucky because I live near the New Forest. So we have what I consider to be hours of hacking. However, we don't have a full day of hacking. So for endurance riders, it would be like popping around the block.
Yes. I mean, any area becomes, you know, a bit samey if you do it year after year. But, you know, if you haven't got the bridle pass to start with, I mean, lots of riders now can only ride round and round in a school. They haven't got any riding outside. And I think that is such a shame, because they're missing out on a large chunk of enjoyment with their horse.
It makes it harder, especially when you're trying to find somewhere to go to move your horse to as well. Hacking is quite a big thing.
And Yes.
And with like you said, such little land around, it means that we're not really, well, we're either not exercising our horses to the best ability, we're not giving them the best education, because we just don't have the facilities for it.
Well, they're not going to be exposed to all the different types of surfaces, because horses that, you know, just train in a school, they're not as robust and tough as those that, you know, go up and down stones and hills, and, you know, they learn to balance themselves. They just don't end up as tough, so they risk injury.
So what sort of thing, what training do you have to do with your horse in the early stages to get them ready for their first endurance ride?
They start with walking for a few weeks just to get them back into the way of it. And then you start introducing trot. You do things slowly and steadily, and you take them over different sorts of surfaces so that they get their balance, establish balance at every pace. And then you start including hills up and down, and then you start going to some rides so that you can use them as training rides.
And is there a young age limit where, you know, a minimum age where people could go and have a go at endurance?
You do get lead rein classes, but by and large, children
I'd
start...
need that, Jenny. Can can that go for 33-year-old adults as well?
Deep brain is for little people. Yeah. But normally they can start at like 8. I mean, Pony Club have got endurance classes, so they can start enjoying their ponies. But a lot of people who join the sport are people that have come back to horses after, you know, having a family and all the rest of it. So there's quite a few middle-aged people doing it, but that doesn't mean to say we're all old and staid and all the rest of it. We have a very good time.
Yeah, I bet you do. Do you take a bottle of drink out with you?
No, but a lot of rides are run over a weekend. They're multi-day rides. So there's quite a social aspect, and it's been known for several bottles of wine to be produced.
So I guess on those weekends then, what do? You take your horses out, you ride for hours, and then do you camp? Or do you stay in bed and breakfasts? Where do you stay?
Well, people choose which they want, you know, where they want to stay. Most horses are corralled, you know, with electric fencing, and they love that. So they really settle to that. And then you either stay in your trailer, your horse box, or if you're feeling like a bit of luxury, they do B&B. But there's a very good social side of endurance. So we enjoy it.
It sounds really good fun. However, I'm thinking my horse will freak out if I have to take him for hours hacking in different places. He can only just about cope with knowing the route that he's got now. So I'm guessing you have to have a particular breed or a particular temperament to be able to do endurance riding.
Well, you have to have a horse that enjoys, you know, going out and exploring and is confident in its own, you know, his own company, because you can't always assume you will be riding with somebody. You can ride with friends or you can ride by yourself, whichever suits your horse better. And many times you meet somebody on a ride and the horses get on really well and you'll ride with them for the whole time. And that's great because that's another friend. So, you know, a lot of it really depends on your horse, but most horses really do enjoy it, and they go zooming off and enjoying themselves. So
and what horse do you have?
Well, since my old horse, you know, that was the champion everything, died unfortunately last year at 21, rather suddenly, so that was fairly traumatic. But I've got a younger one called Alfie, and he enjoys endurance. He's a very all-round type of horse, in that he's good at jumping and cross-country and all sorts of things like that, as well as endurance. But he's an advanced endurance horse now, so that's good.
And what breed is he?
He's Connemara as well.
Oh, lovely. That's nice, because Connemaras are quite good first-time horses, aren't they, for first-time horse owners? Because I always thought it was an Arab that you needed to go to endurance.
Most people have got Arabs. There are a lot of Arabs competing in endurance, but you don't need an Arab. You just need a horse that enjoys being out and has reasonable recovery rates. You know, there are some Arabs around that can't do endurance, like any breed. It's, you know, it's no guarantee of success. But, you know, I've been fairly lucky. I've had two good horses, so.
I'm sorry to hear that you lost one last year. That must have been horrific for you, especially with
it was. It was very sudden. Yes. I mean, he was the one that, he was novice champion and he was supreme champion twice. And he won everything that, you know, was put to him. So, and it was because of him that I got involved with Horsage. You know, they've supported me for 10 years now. So, you know, it's because getting success is never just your efforts. It's always a team effort. So, you know, you've got to have your physio and your farrier and your nutritionist and all the rest of it to make everything just right when you make. You know, when you ask your horse to do these things, you know, you need to make everything as right as you can.
Horse welfare, I hear, is a huge part of endurance Great Britain, isn't it?
Yes.
But we do hear, bearing in mind, Jenny, I know nothing about endurance at all, I'll be very honest. And I feel like there's a 50-50 divide between people that love endurance and people that don't know much about it. And then you've got a small percentage of people that are saying, you're hearing all these negative things about it, saying it's bad for the horse. And I don't understand, because I don't know enough as to why they're saying these negative things.
Well, there's always going to be some people, there's the same in every sport, that just go that little bit too far and forget, you know, forget what the purpose of or the object of the exercise is, and you know, they push too hard, and there will always be those sort of people, you know, who are just prepared to risk too much for the sake of their sport. But endurance as a whole is more, has more vetting controls than any other discipline, and you know, our horses are checked every 25 miles, every 40k or even less, so that, you know, the vet is keeping an eye, and they're very knowledgeable vets, so they are keeping an eye, and if they're not happy, they will just say, no, you can't go out, and that's it. There's no appeal to it. So, you know, on the in the riding side of things, you've got that at the back of your mind, that somebody is keeping an eye on your horse.
That's good.
And that's a reassurance, you know. But, you know, accidents happen. It's one of those things. Horses have got a death wish sometimes.
Yeah, and they can spook. And there's things that horses do that we don't necessarily all have control over.
That's right.
I was just interested, I guess, because I haven't heard anybody say endurance has this bad impact, or endurance damages the horse's legs, or there's no specific point to endurance being bad. It's just, oh no, I don't like it. Well, I wanted to get to the root of why people don't like it, and I honestly think it's because we don't know enough about it.
I think you're right. I think people don't understand that you can actually ride your horse for, you know, 5-6 hours and enjoy it, you know, because dressage, jumping, cross country, they're all things where you just go and ride for like 3-4 minutes and then you get off. But with endurance, you're with your horse and riding it for several hours, and you've got to prepare for that, obviously. But it's just so totally different to what most people do.
And the heart rate of the horse has to be under a certain amount, doesn't it? What does it need to be under by the time you get to the next checkpoint?
It has to be under 64 to pass, or 64 and under to pass the vet. But, you know, there's degrees of it. Obviously, if it's up in the 80s, then you have got, you know, you are concerned. But horses, as soon as you stop, it's the recovery time that's important. It's not the actual high heart rate. It's how long they actually take to recover. Because any horse, when you've been going fast, will have a high heart rate. So then you get off and the horse will have learnt to relax at that point, and the heart rate will drop. But obviously, if it's a hot day, or your horse isn't prepared for the distance that you've been competing in, the heart rate may stay higher than you would like. So, it's not necessarily a very bad thing, but it's not what you want to happen. You know, you want it to come down nicely.
So when we look at eventing, as soon as the horse has finished the cross country course, there's grooms there waiting to throw water on him and cool him down, and you know, they're walking them round. You can't do that at every checkpoint, though, can you?
No, during the ride we have crew spots, and your crew will meet you and pass you sloshers, and the horse will have the opportunity to drink and eat and so on. And then when it goes into the vet gates, again, it's checked by the vet thoroughly, and then it has an opportunity to eat, drink and relax. So, you know, we have to follow this rigorous control of the horse so that problems are picked up early.
I think it's great. When I look in America and I see the cowboys that go out for days on end, you know, riding around, they don't have checkpoints and water, and well, they have water, but
they don't generally go at speed for very long.
Yeah, no, that's true. It's really interesting to compare the different disciplines and see how see what people do with their horses, but also that welfare is the most important thing. It's about looking after them. And I had the pleasure of meeting Nikki Thorne a few months ago. I went to visit her in her yard, and I found it fascinating, the bridles that you use and the head collars that you use. Can you explain your head collar to us?
The clip bridle, on, clip off. Well, we normally have synthetic tack because an awful lot of water is poured over the horse during a ride. And we also generally have a combined bridle and head collar so that the bit can be dropped out of the horse's mouth during the holds at the vet gates. And so the horse can then eat comfortably rather than being hindered by a bit.
I think it's a genius idea. I think we should all use them because it's almost like a quick release. So I think when I want to take Blackjack to my horse to competitions, I really don't like having to put the head collar, take the head collar off, have him with nothing on, and then put the bridle on.
It's a scary second.
It is, yeah, because you think, gosh, what if something happens? We're in a new place. Yeah. There's new horses. What's he going to do? So to have that head collar that you can just slip on a bridle over to the top and it clips on.
Well, the whole thing works as one unit, right? You just drop the bit out if you want to, but at the back of the bridle is a hook so that you can actually put a lead rope straight onto the head collar portion of the combination bridle, you see, if you can follow that.
Yeah, no, I can. I think it's brilliant. I'm looking to go and buy one. So where can we get them from?
I get mine from Performance Equestrian. It's a jolly bright blue one. But you can have any colour. I mean, you could have a nice shiny black one if you wanted.
Yeah, fabulous. And so moving forward to the other bits of the tack, what are your saddles like? Because they've got to be really comfy to hold you in the whole time and also to make sure that it doesn't rub underneath the horse.
That's right. The saddle is very, very important. Just going back to the bridle, we normally have a breast girth as well, you know, to make sure that you can hold the saddle in place exactly, you know, if you're going down a steep hill or up a steep hill. And then I have a general purpose saddle. It's a leather saddle, but it's a GP, working hunter rather. And I've always used working hunter because first and foremost, you go for a saddle that fits your horse and you. Some people aren't successful in finding, you know, a working hunter one, and then they start going on to the endurance ones. But it's not absolutely necessary. You can accomplish, you know, many miles with a good fitting working hunter or general purpose saddle.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. Thank you.
My old horse, he did more than 8,000 kilometres successfully in competition, and we had the same saddle for all of that, all those miles.
Wow. My gosh, Jenny, what do you do if something happens when you're in the middle of, when you're miles away?
Well, nowadays we all have phones, so it's not so bad. And everybody, you know, is coming past you. You know, the other riders will be around. So if there's a problem, and there's checkpoints as well. So, you know, there's always ways and means of sorting things out. And luckily, the, you know, accidents and problems don't happen that often. So.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets.
In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
That's good. Yeah, I guess you're right about the phones, but that moves me back on to something you mentioned earlier about map reading. So originally you had to read maps so that you knew where you were going. That's great. Are you allowed to use GPS now?
Yes, people have GPSs on their phones, but you are essentially working from a map and your route is marked with spray arrows or something like that. So you have got the confidence that you are on the right track.
Mm. Unless you're me and you don't know your right from your left and you go the wrong way, which could quite easily happen.
Most people can cope with arrows.
Okay, so part of the map reading then, and you had mentioned earlier about the roads, and more roads are being developed and they're taking away our bridleways. So you're a volunteer for BHS and you work on the access routes.
That's right.
What do you do for that?
Well, quite a lot of the routes that we ride are not actually shown on the map as bridleways. And so those routes have to be researched, because in 2026 there is a law that the old routes will basically disappear if they haven't been claimed. So it's a bit scary. So I've researched paths, you know, by going to the archives and the public record office and looked at the old documents from 1850 or whatever, and put together a case for the route being confirmed as a bridleway on the definitive map.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Have you done that for the whole of the UK?
No, I concentrate on Yorkshire.
Okay. Thank you. Because I'm sure there's the one, isn't there one person in each county that's doing this?
Yes. Each county has access officers and other people that are working on the same thing. But it's a mega problem. And really, you know, the more people that will join in, the better, because if we don't get these paths recorded on the map correctly, we are in danger of losing them. And, you know, that will, you know, substantially reduce the amount of riding we've got.
What will happen if they're not registered on the map and we lose them as such? Do they close them, or...?
They will close and we can't get them back.
So if you're... Okay, let's say you're in Yorkshire and you know of an access route that you'd like to get recorded. How would they do that? Would they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch, yes. But there's similar people, as I say, all over the place. So their nearest one would be best. And they will be delighted to, you know, any offers of help, and they'll show them how, you know, what to do. But researching is very interesting, but it is very time consuming.
Yeah, I bet it is, especially having to go that far back and look at maps previously.
Yes.
And then you have to go and ride the routes as well to make sure they're still safe.
Well, you don't have to ensure that they're open, because there's an old rule that once a highway, always a highway. So if you can find the evidence, even though you can't find anybody that's ever ridden something, you can actually put the evidence forward to the council.
Oh, that's good. And would they go onto the BHS website to look at who to contact?
Yes. There's information on the website, and as I say, all the access officers very enthusiastic and wanting to meet people that have ridden or know of routes that are in danger.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to do that, because I don't have the time to do that, and I'm sure lots of people are working full time and trying to do their horses, and we're just really grateful, because without you putting in that effort and that time, we're going to lose those access routes, and then we won't have anywhere to ride, and then we'll just sit in our ivory towers moaning about it, but we haven't actually done anything about it. So thank you.
I'll give you an example of the extent of the problem. In the old West Riding area, 3,500 paths were downgraded to footpath during the definitive map process. So potentially 3,500 could have been put on as bridleways and weren't.
And why weren't they?
Basically because at the time, the people that did the surveys it was straight after the war, didn't know what was, you know, what should have been a horse route as opposed to a footpath. There was a lack of knowledge because they were just volunteers that did it, you know, like Boy Scouts or somebody from another area. So they didn't actually, they weren't able to identify the routes correctly. And so they were put on, or a landowner might say, oh, I don't want people going in that area and, you know, blocking them off.
I get that, because some landowners, they have public footpaths that go through the middle of their fields, which would drive me insane. When I moved to Hertfordshire, I was looking for somewhere to put blackjack, and the last thing I wanted was strangers walking through the field, you know, in the middle of the day, because you don't know what they're going to do with your horse.
That's right.
So, yeah, no, it's a tricky one.
But, you know, if you wanted to move it, divert it round the edge, the council will charge you a couple of £1,000 to do it.
God, they're
even though it's, you know, even though it's to the benefit of the public and to the landowner. But, you know, the councils haven't got the resources. I mean, that's the other aspect. So
the main thing is, then we log our routes, we go onto the BHS website, we contact our local access officer and say, and offer some help. Which would be great. Okay.
Which will be gratefully received. Yes.
Now, part of your work that you've been doing is, I mentioned earlier, is you organised some rides. And one of them was in September, North Elms. Is it Elmsall?
Emsall, yep.
North Emsall. And I was just having a look through, and it says here, ride details, description, bridleways, short stretch of road, undulating, some road crossings, proximity to railway lines, estimated 0%, and tarmac, 5%. I think that's great. I think if someone could do that for me when I go on my hacks, that would be amazing as to how many cars I'm going to pass. But that's obviously for a guide for anybody that wants to take part. I mean, this particular one was 40 kilometres novice, and then 25 kilometres PR. So what, first of all, the descriptions, how do you get to those descriptions? What does that mean?
What the ride descriptions?
Yeah, for someone that's interested in going
on
the ride.
Give people a guide, because of it being an urban ride, I didn't really want people coming with novice horses that haven't seen exciting things. You know, I want people to enjoy it, and so I feel it's only right to, you know, tell them that, or give them a brief idea what the ride is going to be like.
I think it's a brilliant idea, but here it says, I was just wondering if you could, you know, the fact that there's only 5% tarmac is brilliant, because I'm presuming that means most of it's in the countryside.
Well, they're urban tracks. Round here we have a lot of disused railway lines, and they provide ideal off-road routes basically for horse riders, cyclists and walkers, and you can go for miles on them. They're brilliant. We've also, with it being a coal mining area, a lot of the collieries have closed down, but they've restored the areas into country parks. So again, we can ride round those, avoiding the roads. So in that particular area, North Emsall, we have actually got quite a lot of good riding. But, you know, when you look at the map, you think, that's a bit urban. So we have to, it's nice to introduce people to an area and, you know, show them that there is actually nice places.
Yeah, no, of course. And did you create this ride? So did you go and ride it yourself, put it all together, pick the routes?
Well, with my co-organiser, we worked out the route. And then you organise all the officials, you know, the vets and the farrier and so on, and the road crossing stewards and the checkpoint stewards, you know, all the volunteers that we need to run a ride. And then sit back and hope that people come.
That must be nice for you, though. It's the next stage of your riding career, isn't it? To be able to go and explore and find a route that you think, this is really good fun, I think people will love this, and then put it together for them to ride. What are your hard and fast rules then for people that want to attend one of your rides?
Well, if they have any queries, then it's better to give the ride organiser a ring, you know, and talk it through. If they're new, then just pick up the phone or email them, you know, and have a chat through, because we've all been through the, you know, the first ride phase. and it can be a bit scary. And quite often we can introduce riders to another person, so they've got somebody to keep them company.
That's nice. And what about for the younger riders that want to, or parents of younger riders that, you know, are considering letting their children have a go?
Well, it's a great sport in that the whole family can join in, because quite often you see the mother and child riding together, and then the father is there crewing and meeting them out on the ride.
That sounds about right, Jenny. They bring the hay, the feed, and they brush the horses, and they're there to take photos.
That's it. Very important. I mean, the longer, when you get onto the longer rides, you are very dependent on a good crew. So it is a really important role. It's not just, you know, making some job up. You are totally dependent on somebody that you trust to look after your horse during the ride, because you as the rider have to recover in the same way as the horse does in the holds.
Mm. When we were talking about the breeds of horses and you know, what would be right for endurance, you said any horse, as long as they're pretty much sane and confident and bold. But like you said, Arabs tend to be used more. Why is that? Why? Because in my head, I'm thinking, well, Arabs are very fine. They have very fine legs. I couldn't imagine. They wouldn't have been my first choice for an endurance horse.
I don't know. I mean, they're supposed to be very tough. Well, they are very tough. Mm. But why it's happened, you know, that they've got such a large proportion in endurance, I don't know. Whether it's from because of overseas riders, I don't know. I've always gone for the non-Arab, so.
Yeah, Connemara would be my choice, because they're breeding. They tend to be quite easy, don't they? They've got good temperaments, generally. Obviously, not all Connemaras are the same, but.
No.
Like I said earlier, good first pony to have.
Sometimes they have a very definite character.
Do they?
Yes.
Go on, what's yours done?
Well, I mean, they've got to be, or they tend to be characters in their own right. Simply, the best horses tend to be like that. I don't know. But they've got a definite view on what they should be doing. So, but you get all sorts of breeds, New Forest, Dales, Fells, all sorts coming into endurance. And they can all do it to a certain level. But like anybody in any sport, you know, you've got to do the training. Mm. And not all horses will advance to very long distances. The same way as everybody can run 10 yards, but not everybody can run 100 metres.
Yes, absolutely. And it's knowing your horse enough, I guess, to know when they've had enough and when they can't go on much longer.
Well, that's where the vets come in, as well as yourself. Mm. You will know when your horse isn't right, because you spend so many hours with it. You'll pick up the small points that aren't, you know, the small pointers that aren't quite right.
I guess it's also important to say that you can't just take your horse out tomorrow and go for an 11-hour hack.
No.
Do you train them in stages?
It takes about 3 years training to get to, you know, for the horse to be fit enough to do the longer distances. And you've got to plan quite a long way in advance to, you know, his training program for that ride. It's not something you, as you say, you don't wake up and think, oh, I'll just go and do 160k.
Mm. No, I mean, I wouldn't wake up tomorrow and do a 3k run, so I definitely wouldn't put my horse through that.
You should come and try it.
Yeah. Jenny, I'll be the one in the middle of the field, in the middle of nowhere, phoning 999 going, I'm freaking out, I've panicked. Get me home somehow. I need a horse box taxi to come pick me up.
It's all right. We'll just give you a buddy and tell you to get on with it.
Do you know, it is something that really interests me. And I would love to get to that stage. I've talked previously on the podcast about wanting to go out for a much longer time on my horse, because, you know, 2 hours is the max. And I'd love to go for a day ride one day, and just to have that confidence and trust in him and myself that we'll be okay. Because like I said, I get to 2 hours and I think, okay, I've got to turn around and come back now, because otherwise I'm a little bit too far away from home and a little bit out of my comfort zone. But yeah, you never know, in 5 years time I could be riding next to you. It certainly wouldn't be on an Arab. I don't think my Frisian would quite cope, but
there's lots of Frisians.
Really?
Yeah.
They like that. They're good at that.
I could send you a beautiful photo of two Frisians having a fantastic ride.
Oh, do. Oh, I bet they're wonderful to watch as well.
Yes. Yeah, they were, the two of them, they were matching. Really lovely, lovely horses.
Oh, lovely. it is interesting, again, the different disciplines, how they need to gather support from the equestrian community. So we see a lot with volunteers in British eventing. And people spend days, you know, going to eventing trials, and they'll stand and help. And how do you, I'm presuming you need volunteers as well. How can people?
Oh, yes.
I almost feel sorry for you, Jenny, because, you know, you're working really hard putting these events together. And I just feel that we need to do a little bit more to support you, really. So if someone wanted to volunteer, how would they do that?
Either get in touch with EGB Central or give the ride organiser a ring, or the group. I mean, they again would be very, very welcome. You need about 20, 30 volunteers to run a ride, depending on the size of the ride. So, you know, there's always a job.
Yeah, I bet.
A lot of rides are actually dependent on non-members, you know, dependent on families and friends and so on, and non-horsey people even. Mm. But it is something that limits what you can do. If you haven't got the helpers at a ride, you are a bit hampered.
Mm, yeah. And next year then, so when you're doing your training you'll start your training in January, what rides are you planning on going to next year?
I'm not sure yet. There's one ride that has taken my fancy, and that's a ride up in the borders of Scotland, an 80k ride that might be of interest.
Oh, sounds nice. And the Royal Windsor Horse Show, they do a big endurance ride, don't they?
Yes, they do a national ride as well as the FEI classes. But getting down to Windsor is a bit problematic for us.
Oh, yeah, because you're quite far, aren't you, in Yorkshire?
Yes. But again, it's on my to-do list, my bucket list. I'd love to go and ride in the New Forest, but again, it's a long way down there. So,
to stay with me, Jenny. You can pop Alfie in with Blackjack. He'll be fine. And then what we can do is I'll hack out with you for an hour. And then there you go, Jenny. Have fun. I'll see you at home for dinner.
You'd have to come to the ride with me, because there's a ride down there, the New Forest ride, New Park, I think it is. So you'd have to come and do that.
Wow, how long's that one?
That's got all different distances, full range.
I guess the starting point, like you said in the beginning then, is a sponsored ride, and starting out with that really, isn't it?
There's lots of sponsored rides to go on, fun rides, but there are group rides run by EGB or around the countryside, and they start at like 10k. Which is only 6-7 miles, so you could walk those.
I could do that one. That's okay. Yeah. I'll have a look at the website then. Their website is enduranceGB.co.uk. Well, Jenny, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you very much. It's been great.
If we want to get in touch, then we just head to the West Riding Endurance GB website, West Riding Endurance GB.com.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much, Jenny. I'm going to let you go and do your ponies now and have a lovely evening.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Jenny's sponsored by Horse Age, a high-quality, dust-free bagged forage available in four varieties, high fibre, timothy, ryegrass and alfalfa. They offer a choice suitable for all types of horses and ponies, including those prone to laminitis. If you'd like more information, just check out horseage.co.uk. Now, I hope you've had a good week with your horse. I've been super busy with Olympia, which has been so exciting, watching the FEI World Cup dressage on Tuesday and Wednesday. Oh my goodness, the music was incredible. And it really does inspire me to have a go at riding to music a bit more myself. So I did get into the school today and had a go on Blackjack. We actually nailed our quarter turns for the first time in 4 years. I managed to get him straight. So huge thanks to my riding instructor, Rachel Smith. She's a superstar. She always keeps me going when I'm about to lose my rag, with myself, never with Blackjack. It's only my own frustrations. And today it was a really good lesson. I felt positive about what we were doing. I felt like we were going to achieve something. So maybe, you know, all this talk of psychologists and talking to Charlie Unwin a few months ago, I spoke to him again the other day, actually, and he was talking about changing your mindset and being positive when it comes to riding, because I'm positive in every other way. But when it comes to riding, for some reason, I've got no confidence, and I just have no belief in myself. And so maybe that worked today. Maybe actually believing that the two of us could achieve these quarter turns is what made it happen. The truth is, I think it was Rachel just telling me what to do at the right time. I think that's how we did it. But no, I'm really chuffed. I've had a good day today. Can't believe it's Christmas next week. Next Monday, I'm sorry to say, there won't be a podcast episode. I didn't think you'd want to listen to a Horse Hour podcast on Christmas Day, because you'd be enjoying family time, and that's what's important. But in the new year, we already have some awesome guests lined up for you. Veterinary experts, and I probably shouldn't say yet because it is a bit of a secret, but we could well be speaking to Harry Mead, which would be very exciting. I really, really, really want to talk to him. So it's not quite confirmed yet, but I am in talks. So fingers crossed we can have a chat with him next year, and some other super guests as well. So 2018 is already lining up to be an absolutely awesome year for Horse Hour. I hope you've got lots lined up for, you know, whatever you're doing with your horse, whatever your goals are. New Year is always a time to be setting new goals. And they don't have to be huge, major, crazy ones. My goal this year was to get back into a school with Blackjack and actually start schooling him again, because, you know, we had to have a lot of time off. And I've been building up his muscles with hacking. And I really wanted to get back into moving him forward from behind and get him listening to my leg a little bit more and listening to me. So I feel like this year I've achieved something. So I have to have a think about what I want to do next year. And I'd love to know what your goals are and also what you've achieved this year. So for our New Year Horse Hour on Twitter, our networking hour, just use the hashtag Horse Hour. Please tell me, what are your achievements? What have you achieved this year? And what are your goals going to be for 2018? But more importantly, just have a really, really lovely Christmas. I really hope that you have a very special time with your family. And I look forward to speaking to you in 2018.
You've been listening to Horse Hour. Join the community on Twitter, Mondays, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 p.m. Eastern, by using the hashtag Horse Hour. Follow Amy at AmyStevenson1 and subscribe to us on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher and Player FM.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.